Hello, welcome to the Sex And Podcast, the podcast that talks about how we work through our health challenges to have fulfilling sexual relationships with ourselves and others. I am Megan Narvaez, a licensed mental health counselor in the state of Washington, and this is episode number 27. Content warning. As we are talking about mental health and sharing stories often rooted in trauma, some parts of this episode may be difficult to listen to. Please take care of yourself and take a break from the episode if you need to. Hello, Liam. Thank you so much for being part of the podcast.
Yeah.
Would you like to please introduce yourself to those who are listening?
I will, yeah. So my name's Liam. My pronouns are she and they. I'm a doula. I'm a full spectrum doula. That means that I work in a supportive space for people going through any kind of pregnancy or reproductive transition. And I've worked in reproductive healthcare for maybe about 10-ish years now, and I've been a full-time doula for the past couple. I'm married to my wife, so I identify as a queer lesbian, also as femme. And we, for the last year, have been trying to have a baby.
And I read on your blog that that's been a process that has been difficult and has grief attached to it in that year of trying to have a baby.
Yeah, I should say, so my business is called Bread and Roses Doula, and I started a blog about a year ago, just kind of documenting the journey, and I thought it would be a certain way, and then it went completely in a different direction. So I started it like, you know, I'm a writer in some ways too, and I really like writing memoir style things, and so this felt like a really good niche for me to begin with, but. And so I thought it would be funny. I thought mostly it was going to be humorous and like kind of awkward to talk about trying to get pregnant, because our initial step into trying to get pregnant was doing so with a known donor, with doing at-home insemination. So very DIY, you know. And it wound up being very deeply emotional and intense. And it was filled with grief and difficulty, and it just unpackaged a lot, I think, for both myself and for us together.
What kinds of feelings, emotions did it unpackage for you? You named grief as one of them, but in the process, like what was happening for you both?
I mean, we're two different people, first of all, right? So we're going to feel very different ways. My wife is butch. She identifies as butch, and she is and not all butch women feel this way, but she does not have any desire to be pregnant. So even connecting, it was hard in this way. It felt a little bit like a stereotypical, maybe heterosexual couple that she just like could not connect with me on the grief point of not being pregnant, because she doesn't have that desire. So that was kind of isolating, and not to give her credit. I mean, she was like the beam of optimism that I really needed. So she fulfilled her role really well. But I think I came to realize that I live in the rural Midwest, essentially. So the community aspect, like, you know, yeah, there's lots of straight women out there trying to have a baby, but there's not a lot of people in my particular position trying to have a baby. And so whereas maybe somebody who is trying to conceive and having a little difficulty might be able to turn to their friends and commiserate, I don't know anybody in my community who's like, you know, carrying sperm across across town once a month, you know, under their shirt to keep it warm, and then like doing this whole process. So there was that. I mean, there was lots of things. There was also just the kind of practical aspects. And I like to be clear that, like, I identify as a lesbian, as queer. My wife is butch, but you know, queer conception does not look like having to have any kind of donor, whether it's an egg or sperm donor, right? Trans women and cis women and those lesbian relationships, like people who have sperm and an egg who identify all kinds of ways to right. have children together. But when I'm talking about my experience, it's simply mine. It's not like a, it's not to indicate that lesbians are only people who make eggs and, you know.
Thank you for clarifying that. That is important to, it's important to kind of give that perspective and show and remind people of that. So thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. No, no turf feelings here. Just nope. But for me in particular, you know, I just don't have sex with cisgender men. So the practical aspect of handling semen was really kind of gross. And I thought to myself, like, you know, okay, I could do this for 6 months. And then like, we started taking breaks because it was just, I wasn't prepared. And I don't think anybody really talked about, and something that I think is important to talk about now that I've been through it, but it's tricky because we don't want to body shame. And I don't want to like draw these weird, like, lesbian sex is only a certain kind of sex and only includes certain kind of bodies. But for me, that like kind of handling of this material was really, and having it be in my body was kind of dissociating for me. It was really kind of brought up different issues of trauma. And of course, you know, when that happens, you have all kinds of things kind of unfold, and it's just hard to wrap our brains around and our hearts around, and wasn't what I was expecting at all.
How did it affect intimacy between you and your wife?
I mean, there was the aspect of like, okay, so for, just to be clear about like the process we were doing, we had a donor that we knew, and when I was ovulating during the month, around 3 to 5 times, my wife would go, usually my wife would go and pick up the sample. He'd like create the sample, right? He would leave it in the mailbox. She would tuck it in her sports bra to keep it at body temperature, drive home, which is like 10 or 15 minutes, and then like put it in a syringe or like a soft cup. So any lesbian TCC people out there know exactly what I'm talking about. Like, it's the question between a syringe or soft cup. We tried all kinds of ways. And then for me to kind of insert it vaginally and leave it there. So, and like hope for the best, like pray or, you know, give sacrifices to gods, whatever needed to be done. Or, you know, just be mad, I mean, or be upset or cry or whatever. So as far as intimacy goes, there was like 2 pieces, like during this insemination process. And at the very beginning, it was everything that we kind of hoped for. Like, it was very intimate. It was quiet. It was, I wouldn't say it was sexual as much as sensual. And that felt important. But as time went on, that was a harder place to get to because I felt outside of my body, right? And, you know, as those first months kind of went by, And when you're trying to conceive, you're so in tune with your body. You're checking your cervical fluid and your temperature and all of these things. So you're hyper aware of everything. And I became hyper aware how like my vagina was different. It smelled different, you know. I disconnected from myself and therefore like sexually we kind of disconnected a little bit.
To backtrack a little bit, it smelled different because of,
well, because there was semen. Yeah. Uh-huh. I had forgotten, like, we've been together for a while. You know, you don't think about that. And it's not like it smelled strongly or terrible or something. It just didn't smell like me.
Right.
Yeah.
There was other things in there. Yes.
Right. There's proteins and yeah, there's all kinds of stuff. So yeah, it's not in my mind, like when we were formulating this plan, it was, I don't know, you don't read about that or think about that, but like once it's in there, like it doesn't just like disappear, like it's inside me forever. So
is it like, would you say that in the beginning when you're preparing for trying to conceive with your wife, there was like kind of like a romanticization romancing of the idea of like doing this that brought like a lot of different love and like happy, joyous feelings. Like, yeah, we're going to try to conceive a baby. We're going to do this together. It's going to be a wonderful journey. And then like you're saying, as time went by, as the reality of what doing this that you weren't informed about was of having to handle the material, the semen, and have that dissociation of your body from like having that process go on, that it became more, you use the word detached, I think, but also just kind of, I don't know. I like imagine that over time it just became more miserable of like a feeling.
Great word. It was. I mean, I hate to put it in such a negative light, but it really did become miserable for both of us. Yes, at the beginning it was very romanticized, and I think that if we hadn't, you know, continued trying for a year, if we'd gotten pregnant in the first couple of times, I probably wouldn't quite feel so strongly that way. Because it was sweet. Like, we had a known donor. It was someone that we knew and felt connected to. And, you know, we would have dinner with him. You know, the pandemic certainly plays a part in, like, the logistics getting crazy and feeling intense and all of that, too. But, yeah, it just, the idea that, like, we could be very in control of the situation as a doula. You know, I don't believe that all reproductive experiences need to be as medicalized as they are. So I think intrinsically kind of lean towards a process that wasn't quite, you know, as medicalized. Because when we think of queer people getting pregnant, we automatically assume that people are doing IVF. And for the most part, that's actually just not true. Hella expensive and not accessible to most people. So the way that we were doing it is actually quite more common. So yeah, it was a really romantic idea, and I think it can be for a lot of people. But afterwards, on the other side of this, we're like, yep, when we try again, we're like doing IVF or something, like something that, I don't know, other side of the spectrum, highly medicalized, removes kind of this really kind of third person in the room. And there's a lot of like queer family theory around that and like pros and cons, but
if it's okay to share, what are the pros and cons for you and your wife?
So well, first, cost is definitely a factor when it comes to, there's what I like to call queer tax. I'm sure that's an actual thing, or it's called something else, but I've come to think of it as a queer tax, and it's like monetary, right? The lack of access to reproductive options to build families is fraught with barriers around money, you know, from beginning at like the socioeconomic status that queer people live in general, to insurance companies not covering fertility for queer people, because we can't qualify as infertile, right?
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's not true for all times, but the majority of how insurance companies work, you have to fail, quote unquote, at conceiving for 12 months of unprotected sex. And if you're a couple who doesn't, you know, or a family that doesn't produce all of the necessary ingredients on your own, it's impossible to meet that standard, right? Carrie and I, my wife and I, are never going to, that's just not, you know, we don't fit that description. So we would never qualify even if it was covered, which for the most part, I mean, IVF and things like that are not very well covered at all. But particularly for queer people, that's just really inaccessible. But beyond that, you know, the emotional tax of having to step outside of, we already live outside of heteronormative lives, but when it comes to creating a reproductive pathway, we have to really, for the most part, bring on people who don't really understand our families all the time. So we're like walking through a process of like a straight male donor or something like that. And I don't know, it's just, there's that emotional, like having to build that connection and sometimes even like make your case or like bring people into understanding what it's like for us and that this is a need. And I don't know, I think people, when they're kind of asked like, will you be our sperm donor, are like, they've never thought of that before, but it's like, you know, if not you, who? You can't like just keep passing it off to somebody else. Somebody has to say yes eventually. Yeah, so there's a lot of emotional things, and then down to like the actual process and combining schedules and sometimes feeling like there is a third person in the room. So, but to speak more to your question of like, what are the pros and cons? The pros of doing like an at-home and known donor process is that it is maybe in some ways a reflection of the queer community and how we build families overall, right? Which is very kind of very personal, very interconnected, and non-normative. And then when people look at things like IUI or IVF and kind of breaking things down more into like genetic materials than relationships, or at least it can be viewed that way, I think sometimes we see that as maybe less queer. And I think maybe I would fault myself for seeing that as like a less queer vision. But I think I've left behind those kind of purist values as time has gone on.
And going back to like how it's affected you and your wife. Mm-hmm. So there was this romanticized point, and then it became more difficult, more miserable. And you mentioned that that in ways you guys did become kind of like maybe isolated in each other, in one's own feelings. Like you were feeling alienated. She didn't really quite understand like, or could fully maybe empathize with, mm-hmm. with how this is all going for you. And I imagine she was also going through her own kinds of emotional struggles too.
Yeah, totally.
And so when you did like, let's say have sex for each other separate from, you know, trying to conceive, mm-hmm. What was that like, especially with like this underlying idea or like knowledge that you were starting to feel dissociated from your body because of the process?
Mm-hmm. I mean, something that I wish I had been a little bit more prepared for is like the impact on intimacy, because it's usually talked about in terms of like, oh, like sex is going to start feeling like work because you're trying to have a baby. And that's an incredibly heteronormative way to look at how you know, fertility challenges impact your sex life. For us, it was just like emotional disconnect was really hard on us. And it was also frustrating. Like it was frustrating to not feel connected as much as we had before. Plus also having this like 2 week period of time where like neither of us were interested, and no, you know, like I wasn't connected to my body because of what was happening as far as inseminations, and you know, Carrie also is not interested in that kind of material in her own. So it created a little bit of there was a gross factor going on that was a hard hill to climb, and I think was fair for both of us. And you know, when we would try to connect, there were times where it was really magical because it kind of, but it always, I think, instead of it becoming like a routine part of our lives, it kind of started feeling like these a little bit of a mountain to climb to get back to each other and connect. And that's exhausting. Like, you know, when it feels so high stakes every time, that's just, yeah, it's exhausting.
What, for people who are listening and understand, you know, that journey and that exhaustion of that uphill battle trying to climb every single time this happens, like what helped for you both? What did, not that like every single time worked and it went perfectly, but like what kinds of things did you guys try that helped you to reconnect after those difficult moments?
Yeah. Well, therapy is really important. if you're not going to therapy while you're trying to conceive, you should think about it, because it was just really helpful to be able to have somebody reflect, a third party reflect the stories that we were both living to each other. Because it can be very difficult to communicate with your partner when you're both living together this intense experience, but you're also living it very separately. Yeah. You're kind of living in two parallel. It's really messy. And so that was helpful. So I would say go to therapy, have a good therapist, and communicate and talk to each other. But also for me, I mean, it was letting myself feel my feelings and having her let me feel my feelings. My feelings are big and loud. And so that was a challenge, but I think it really helped, like when I could just like cry or be upset, that really eliminated the need for her to fully understand what I was going through. That kind of would dissipate, and it would just be, we were still in it together, even though we were experiencing separate things.
Yeah. And when you said cry and be upset, like I imagine there are different reasons to cry and be upset, of course, but my mind went to like, let's say getting your period and realizing it didn't work. Mm-hmm. And that devastation of like knowing, okay, I'm not pregnant this month. But also, was there also big emotions and tears related to the insemination process that sometimes happened?
Yeah, I mean, there was. I mean, there was the last month we did an at-home insemination was really kind of the last straw, because when we were doing it, I just burst into tears and said, like, I don't want to do this anymore. And I almost, to a certain degree, wish I had a way to be more articulate about how it was just a very visceral, like it's a very visceral feeling for me of knowing that like I just couldn't. And just, I had really not let myself feel that during the inseminations, because you're supposed to be hopeful and like, you know, you're supposed to be hopeful and happy and all of these things, right? And I just didn't feel that way. And honestly, once I did that and just like cried and was bitter and like felt terrible about it and just let myself, like while I'm laying on my back with my feet in the air, which yes, I know everybody, that doesn't technically help, but just like crying, and Carrie's next to me and just like, you know, comforting me. Yeah. It was that. I mean, yes, it's upsetting when you're not pregnant, especially when like it's so, it's not like, you know, I'm just having sex with my husband and, you know, that's getting, you know, aggravating, not to minimize that, but it's like, it's so much to even get there to then like not have it happen is, yeah, that's also, you know, creates a lot of big frustrating feelings, but it was both. So basically all month, it was just a roller coaster.
Yeah. Hey again, just wanted to drop some quick info for you. The Sex and Podcast has a Patreon. Click the link in the show notes to head on over to the Patreon page and take a look at the different membership options. One exciting thing I'm offering to exclusive members are handmade pottery gifts made especially for Sex and members by Mai Boo, the owner of Mark Moeller Pottery. So if you want to drink some coffee or tea while listening to the show, check out the Patreon. Okay, back to the episode. And with the donor that you had, I wonder what that process was like. I'm imagining maybe like a text or call saying like, hey, we need some more. If it was the same person, I'm curious just about that, I guess, journey with that third person, like you're saying, like, even though that third person isn't in the room with you, mm-hmm. he is still kind of like there in all of this. And I was curious about that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, for the most part, my wife like really interacted with him. This was like my way to kind of like try to protect my space, I guess, and like create a little bit of distance. So but we were all in the same, basically a text thread. And, you know, when it was that time of the month and when I was ovulating, we would just text him and check his schedule and find out when he was available and check it with our schedules. And, yeah, we would usually plan. I mean, it changed every month because we kept trying to like perfect the science, essentially. I was on fertility medication for a few months as well, so that had to be much more timed. And so we would text him and yeah, exactly what I said, and then go pick it up and come home. And that was usually somewhere between like 3 and 5 times in a month. So there's not only like the negotiation, it seems at the beginning very simple, like we'll text you and it'll be for 3 days and But it becomes, as time goes on and you're getting advice from your doctor and you're taking medications, you have to communicate a lot more about the timing. And it changes every month. You don't ovulate the same time every month. So the planning together, like, it definitely creates this third person or third space who, yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah. And you are a doula. And so part of your career is helping other people who are either, and this is like my very narrow scope of what doulas do, but there's helping people who are pregnant. And then maybe do you do some like work with people who are trying to get pregnant as well?
You know, I don't focus specifically on fertility doula work. There are amazing fertility and infertility doulas out there. I sometimes chat with queer couples who are trying to conceive, particularly after I've been very open about my journey. But in my world, like my particular space as a full spectrum doula, I work with people who are choosing abortion. I work with people who are pregnant, people who are experiencing loss, and people who are postpartum and really early parenthood. So those are like the main things that I do. I don't focus on fertility. So that's the scope of my work.
In that parallel, you're trying to get pregnant and you're helping people who are pregnant or, like you said, making a choice to terminate the pregnancy, like whatever that is. But what was that like for you to, be part of someone else's birthing process while you were struggling with your own fertility and your own ability to conceive?
It was fine, honestly. I mean, fine. Like people, especially like clients who would read my blog would be a little worried sometimes, or not even worried, but more very empathetic. Interestingly, I seem to draw, like my clients usually find me really early, and I've had lots of clients who have had their own fertility challenges. And that was happening even before we started our journey or I was really open. So it's just been interesting. And I feel like I've connected with a lot of my clients on a deeper level of understanding and knowing, like, birth is a big event no matter what, but to be in the room with a client who, you know, did IVF for a long time and this is their first baby and like that connection with my client, I feel the bigness of that, if that makes sense. Maybe more so than somebody who hasn't necessarily experienced that challenge. But for the most part, I mean, what I love about my job is that I'm spending time with people and helping them through an experience that they're choosing, that they want, right? Or even if it's, you know, a challenging decision or a challenging pregnancy, there's still, you know, the goal in working together is to make sure that they feel empowered and in control. So while people, I feel like, expected that I would feel resentful or angry or hurt, and I surprised myself by not feeling that way. I just felt remarkably happy for my clients it didn't really create a lot of negative feelings. However, that's my professional life. So in my personal life, I can't deny, like, you know, you scroll through your Facebook feed and you see that, you know, cousin that you've never met that you're for some reason on Facebook with and they've had their fifth kid and you're just like, really?
So you were able to, I guess, in some ways, like, what's the word I'm looking for? I use this word all the time as a therapist and now I can't remember it. Compartmentalize what you were going through. And like you as a working professional helping other people, like you're able to connect to the joys and the challenges that the people that you're working with have gone through to get to that point of their stage of pregnancy or their point of termination, like whatever that is. And then for you, like in your personal life, just grieving what that means to not have that future, like that you are hoping for already is starting to happen. If you started a year ago, the idea would be that you would have already, you know, had a baby by now. And that isn't the case. And you're watching other people have babies. You're watching the internet with all the baby things. And I mean, I at some point want to have a kid. I haven't started to like intentionally try. But I do follow a lot of like baby Instagram accounts, even mm-hmm. just like brands that I like, and just like, I don't know, Instagram influencer moms and stuff. And I like every
dream
time
life.
I see something, dream life. And I get those like warm feelings because I'm like so excited for the time when I am ready. But for you, this has been a whole year of grief and mourning and pain. And so I imagine just like coming across those things just feels differently now.
It does. I mean, it hurts because we didn't necessarily think we would get pregnant right away, although everyone hopes that, right? But we did envision a future that just didn't happen. And the hardest part of that was like letting go of it. So like one piece, I wanted to be pregnant. I wanted to have a baby before I was 30. I don't know why. For some reason that felt important to me. And then, you know, even as time went on and that clearly wasn't going to happen, I still like weirdly held on to that. Like, oh, well, maybe I'll be pregnant before I'm 30. I'm like 29 and a half, guys. Like, it's not happening. but once I like let go of the future that just didn't come to be, we're living in a different future than what we imagined. And letting go of that was really important. But it was challenging to think about like, oh, like I would be on maternity leave right now. Or, you know, one way I described it to my wife and like trying to explain how upsetting it would be each month is that like each month you imagine like, oh, if I get pregnant this month and I'm due this month and I'll have like a summer baby and then it's a fall baby and then it's a winter baby and then it's a spring baby and it's really just no baby. Like I went through a whole season of like imagining getting pregnant and what it would be like being pregnant during that time. And it just never came to be. So but I have to say once like I let that go and just like acknowledged like the reality of it and we decided to stop doing this thing that felt so traumatizing and was creating distance in our relationship because we were frustrated in different and similar ways, our lives just got a lot better very quickly, like immediately.
So being able to let go of the expectations, as painful as it was to take that pause, ended up being a huge relief. Mm-hmm. Not to say that you're not going to continue trying at a later point, but you, like you said, you just needed that break just to kind of diffuse any of the trauma that was starting to form around all of this for you and your wife.
Yeah. And to, get to know new people. I mean, we're a different couple now. You know, we're different people as individuals now. I look back on myself a year ago, somebody who was like excited and in a lot of ways naive and like didn't know a lot of stuff. And that's fine, but I'm not that person anymore, you know? And that's okay. But there's loss in there and there's growth in there. And those two things always happen at the same time. So it's also just, you know, in taking a pause, a moment for us to, we're actually like in the middle of really intentionally like pausing and like kind of just looking at each other and being like, okay, who are you? you know, and how have we changed and how does it change how we view the future and what our long-term goals are? So, and it's a good thing. It's a good thing to do that in relationships.
When you're mentioning that you are 29 or even so 29 and a half, you're 28 when you started to try. Mm-hmm. I also had this idea that I would at least be pregnant by the time I'm 30 and I just turned 29. So when you said that, like I had similar feelings because as time has gone on, like it just, I mean, for me, it hasn't been, I guess, like the right time, even though I also recognize there isn't necessarily like the best time either. I went through like I guess some level of like grieving and like trying to come to an acceptance, like my plans for when I'm going to have a kid isn't set in stone. Like obviously, like even if I did start trying now, doesn't mean I'm going to have a kid by the time I'm 30, and having to let go of that. And it's funny, like I thought back on it too, when I was still in like, let's say high school, there was this very linear idea of what life is supposed to be from just like the different messages I was told. And one of those is that I would be married by the time I was like 23 and have like a kid by the time I was 24. Like that just seemed to be what was supposed to happen. And now that's like 5 years later and I still don't know like when I will try to start, and acknowledging that there is a fear that maybe I can't conceive. Like, I don't know until I try, or maybe it is difficult and painful. Cause I think in a lot of ways, as you were describing in your beginning phases of this, like have this like romanticized idea of what it would be like to start trying. Mm-hmm. And there's a part of me that is afraid of what that's going to be like if it's not that easy. Mm-hmm. And like all these thoughts pretty much like every time I have my period like come up for me, like one, this like relief, okay, I'm not pregnant right now because I'm not sure if I want to be pregnant right now anymore, but also like I'm getting older, things are changing, I don't know what's going to happen in the world, if we're going to talk about the pandemic and the upcoming elections and all these like worries of what the future is going to be. Mm-hmm. And then part of me is just like, I don't know, and I'm just gonna have to be okay with not knowing until I can revisit it. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, it is difficult. And so I imagine like, you know, a lot of people go through this and it's different kinds of emotions for everyone. It's not the same grieving process. It's not the same thought process around it, but mm-hmm. It's nice to hear that, you know, from your experience of it, especially with connecting to your wife, you were able to see at least right now as a time of growth and being able to reevaluate things and come to a good place about it by letting go of those expectations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think like that's, if there's like a piece of advice I could to anybody trying to conceive, it's to try to let go of your expectations. And it's so funny because in doula work, I try to help people do that when they're planning their births all the time. I have a blog post called "It's Time to Break Up with the Birth Plan," and maybe it's time to break up with our fertility plans. Like, you know, I say all the time to my clients, like you cannot control birth. You can influence it. You cannot control birth. There are so many things that are going to happen that you don't have control over. And maybe a little bit of like a doula lesson for myself. Like, I can influence a lot of things, but there is a little bit of, I mean, maybe fate or destiny or, you know, what, it's just a situation in which you just cannot make something happen that's not going to happen, particularly on a timeline that you set for yourself. So, yeah. And I think also there have been moments along the way where my wife and I have kind of looked at each other and been like, pause. If we don't have a baby, like, that's okay. Like, it's not okay. But we want to be together more than we just want to have a baby. And that kind of clarifying experience has been really good for our relationship, actually. We want children, but we don't want children so much that we're willing to drive our relationship into the ground for it.
That's so great that you're able to have that conversation, as difficult as it was to figure that out and come to that place that like you and your wife, like you guys, you're going through this really painful thing, but you don't want it to be what drives you apart. Mm-hmm. And recognizing that, you know, at the forefront of all of this, it's you and her together.
Right. Yeah.
Well, is there anything else that we haven't talked about that feels important to share?
For anybody out there that like worries about lesbian bed death while you're trying to have a baby, I don't know if you've heard of the phrase lesbian bed death.
Can you explain it to us? To people who haven't heard?
Lesbian bed death is kind of like this funny term for women, or, you know, and that's a broad description across many gender identities. It's certainly not exclusive to cisgender women, but women who get into relationships together, particularly monogamous ones, who are so kind of intrinsically focused on the relationship aspect that they kind of just stop having sex because like the focus is so much on companionship. And you know what? That is definitely real. And it's okay. Like, it's going to be all right. You should talk about it. You should work through it. You should go to therapy. You should identify each other's needs. But if at the beginning somebody had just told me, like, chill out about that, like, it's not forever, like, when you go through something, when you're two people who are particularly very socialized or intrinsically like relationship focused people, you know, emotional intimacy focused people, that one other thing, if your emotional intimacy falls off on the wayside, it will definitely be affected, but it doesn't mean it's going to last forever. So calm down. It's gonna be okay. Yeah, that's the last thing. Lesbian bed death is okay and it won't last forever.
Was this something that you were worried about in the past until you were able to like have these conversations with her?
Yeah. It was something that, I mean, before I met my wife, I'd never been in quite such a long-term relationship. So we've been together now for going on 7 years. And I think before that, my longest relationship was like a year, like I was in my early 20s. Okay. We met when I was 23. But anyway, so I mean, as a 20 something, you know, who looking back, we got married fairly young. I was 25. She was 30 something. She's 6 years older than me. I was a little worried because I was like, oh, we're together for a long time and I hear that this happens. And to a certain degree it did, but it, you know, relationships, they just ebb and flow and there's no need to really freak out about that too much.
Thank you for sharing that, especially, I mean, and coming back to sex, there's so many things that complicate sexuality and mm-hmm. being able to connect with a partner, especially a partner that we've been in long-term relationships with, as you described. But it's not forever and it can be a very isolating and dividing situation when time goes on. For some people, it's a week, 2 months becomes a year. For a lot of relationships, like there are people who haven't had sex in 5 years of that relationship. Mm-hmm. But with therapy, with communication, with trying to give space to it and lower expectations, like all these kinds of things that kind of add to the tension, add to the distance, finding ways to come together and mm-hmm. and work on it. It does change over time. Mm-hmm. It is possible. So yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, Liam, for being on the Sex Ann podcast and talking about your story.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And for people who want to find you on social media or your website, can you tell them how to do that?
Yeah, so my website is breadandrosesdoula.com. Pretty straightforward. That's the name of my business. If you want to find me on Instagram, which I'm pretty active on, particularly since the pandemic has happened, I'm on there all day, every day. My handle is Doula X Liam. So you would say it like Doula by Liam. So it's Doula X Liam. Pretty easy to find. You can follow me on there.
Content warning. As we are talking about mental health and sharing stories often rooted in trauma, some parts of this episode may be difficult to listen to. Please take care of yourself and take a break from the episode if you need to. Thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time.